or you can go with just a straight recording. And they just sat there and told me what a great system this was if I went voice activated. And to make a long story short, their commercials didn't match their performance. But there is a little switch here that if you shoot, flip it all the way down, then it'll just record like a normal tape recorder. And I think when I went to put this in, I must have bumped it. Mm-hmm. So when after you graduated from school, how did you end up in Michigan? I always find that fascinating how people get where they end up.
Of course, you don't remember the Great Depression.
No.
See, I got out of high school in 1925, and also got out of high school and went back home to Nebraska for the summer. Didn't know what I was going to do. And during the summer, my mother's four sisters, my mother's got, drove their old Ford touring car out to Nebraska, and they were interested in getting my sister, who was a year older than I, into school someplace, because she'd been out of high school for a year. So they came out, and they were going to persuade my parents to send her to school. And which they did, and she went back to Iowa and went to teacher's college there, Northern Iowa University now. And she was going for 2 years to get a teacher's certificate. And on the way back to Iowa, they were involved in an automobile accident, and one of the aunts was killed. And so that left two of them to...
Been that much of a she got too relaxed.
Well, so then the two aunts who were living together in Cedar Rapids, everybody felt sorry for them. They decided that I should go and live with them for a year and go to Coe College, which I did. And I don't know how come, really, because we didn't have. I went through school on absolutely nothing. And after about 2.5 years at Coe, my dad got sick, and I went home to help out. And he died in the following October. And then I went to summer school, University of Nebraska, and got a teacher certificate. Taught school for a year, but I wasn't a good teacher, and I didn't really enjoy it. And when the year was over, I wasn't going to do it again.
Well, you don't believe like everybody else does that anyone be a teacher?
Oh, no, you. I don't think so.
It takes different kinds.
I do better one-on-one. I've helped a lot of people with problems that they had, but I majored in mathematics, and I could really help people with mathematics and make them understand it, but in a classroom in a country school, I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
So I wasn't really happy, and I'm sure I wasn't a good teacher, and I didn't want to teach again. So I went back and finished, got my degree at Coe, and then I got out and I worked 3 years at Coe. It was a job that had, it wasn't much of a job really, but I thought it was wonderful.
I
liked it so much. And I worked for the Dean of Women, and she told me at the end of the first year that if I would take shorthand and typing, and could then she would give me some office work to do. So I rented a typewriter and bought a shorthand book, and a friend of mine helped me, and those secretarial skills I learned on my own. And I worked there at Coe for 3 years and liked it pretty well, but then the Depression really hit. That was in fall of 33, and they dispensed with my job. It just wasn't there anymore. So, and I had an aunt who was here as a director of the YWCA. She belonged to the Zonta Club, and she heard of a job out at the university that she called me up and did I want to come and apply for it. So I did. Well, I didn't get that job, but I started working as a graduate assistant back in the fall of 33. $35 a month. You could take all the courses you wanted for $35 a quarter.
Oh,
geez. Those were awfully hard years. Well, after 6 months, a friend's girl I had met, her, there was a job, full-time job opened up in one of the banks, so I took that. And then I went back to university and worked full-time. And then I went to State Department of Conservation and worked full-time at a job that paid a little more. And, you know, $10 or $15 a month was a lot more in those days and worth changing jobs for. And then after 3 years, 1938, why, this job was open in the president's office at the university, so I went out and applied for it and got it. And I worked for Mr. Shaw 3 years. And then when Mr. Hanna became president in 41, I just stayed in the office.
What was Dr. Shaw like?
Well, he was a very quiet, sober Scotsman.
I got that feeling in what little I've read of him.
And very frugal. And he would say some of the funniest things you ever heard. I don't know why I didn't write them down. I should have.
I've always liked the sense of humor you'll find in anyone from the British Isles, because it tends to be classic understatement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he was always awfully nice to me, and I enjoyed working for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, his daughter married Mr. Hanna, and Mr. Hanna was a go-getter. In those days, he was secretary, and he was the one who started all the building program.
Mm-hmm.
And getting the aid of WPA and VWA.
Mm-hmm.
And
I know I've done a little bit of research and study on his background, and you can see how one of the smartest things his father ever did was giving him the responsibility as early as he did in the poultry area.
Mm-hmm.
Because I felt it helped him develop his own self-confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And a knowledge that really he was able to use much faster than most people.
Oh, yeah.
The only place in there where everything seems logical steps, where I don't understand how he got from one to the other is when he was an extension worker at Michigan State, the jump, well, it seems to me now, because, you know, we're looking at enormous systems nowadays, but the jump from extension worker to secretary of the university, or secretary to the trustees.
Well, he had been something to do with the federal...
Yeah, he was with the...
A poultry.
Yeah, director for a while.
Mm-hmm. And then there was an opening in the secretary's office, and I think they had recognized him as a very bright young man.
Oh.
They'd like to keep around. And so he came back to be secretary to the board.
Mm-hmm.
And heavy responsibilities in that office. In those days.
I saw how he mentions the three things that he got hit with the moment he sat down. Dr. Shaw told him that when he got down to the bridge, that seemed minor compared to everything, you know, the funding problems he had.
Mm-hmm.
With the legislature, getting them to forget the loans. It was just like, wow, what a opening day shot.
Yeah.
And it was, about 1936 that he came in, and so that would have been before you got here.
That was before I got there. Mm-hmm.
So,
and of course, before I worked in the building, I didn't know Mr. Hanna from anybody. I wasn't interested in that part of the campus at all.
Well, for sure, you're trying to learn your own job probably at that point.
And I worked in economics the first time I worked out there as a graduate assistant and then as full. And, oh, that was far removed from the president's office. We didn't even hear about it.
Mm-hmm. Now, when he came in, what was it like? You know, kind of, if you can, give me a feel for those first couple of years.
Oh, well, I knew when he came in, I was pretty nervous about it, because I knew he was a hard worker.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you always have doubts, can I do it or can't I? And of course I was all real flattered that he asked me to stay on, because back in those days I wouldn't have worried too much, because I knew I could get another job if I needed it. But things changed drastically from being a quiet office without very much to do. I had spent a lot of time just reading old files but turned out to be very valuable to me in the years ahead. And but when Mr. Hanna came in, why, I was busy.
He had you jumping on.
Oh, he had a lot of things to do and
what was he like as a person to work for?
Well, I should I always thought he was wonderful to work for.
Mm-hmm.
He was always interesting, and he didn't spend any time passing the time of day. It was all just business. Very well organized.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd start out in the morning with the mail would come in, and we'd open it, and by 9 o'clock or so, everything was disposed of. And I don't think there weren't many pieces of correspondence that came in that didn't have a reply, and soon.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd come in, I'd open the mail, take it into him, he'd dictate, dispose of everything, do this with this, this with this, this with this, dictate on that.
Did he spend long hours? I noticed that he came to on campus real early in the morning.
Yes, he was usually there when I came in. And I didn't come in early, but I tried to be on time.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked usually all day long. He might leave before I did, but not very much. He was there from 8 to
mm-hmm.
5. People used to say, well, President Hanna isn't there very much, is he? I said, oh, he's there a lot. And that was in the years when he was busy with all these outside interests that he had.
Yeah, the team was.
And when he was away, he was always calling in to keep in touch. And I'd always keep a running list of everything that had happened so I could tell him everything.
Two things about him that I've either gotten from Dr. Nioff or has seen in his own writings that I'm going to be addressing to him directly too, but I'm going to be asking others as well, is he indicates that from very early on that he knew where he wanted the university to go.
Yeah, I think he did.
And I'm just amazed as to how he was able to make that decision so early in his life.
I asked him one day something that happened. I said, well, how did you know that this was coming on? And he said, well, I wasn't born yesterday.
Do you remember what it was?
No, I don't remember what it was. I wish I did.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
The other thing
But he was always ahead of everybody. He could foresee what was needed. During the war, he was making plans for after the war.
Mm-hmm.
Up to date on all sorts of information that he needed, and so that when the war was over, here we were all set up to take care of all these returning veterans.
One of the things that has always amazed me about someone like that, because I've seen people like that who think about tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
how was he able to translate that forward thinking back to people who go day to day without them resenting him?
Oh, he just got them all involved, and he'd give people jobs to do and tell them, and they'd have meetings, and he wasn't alone in the...
Oh, I'm sure that, yeah.
And I think most of the people who worked with him certainly had his complete loyalty and cooperation,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't hesitate to speak up, and he always said that anybody who, if you had people on your staff who were in a consulting position or advisory position, they didn't help you much if they always agreed with you. And he was always willing to sit down and listen to somebody else. I always thought that was a pretty good quality. A lot of people don't do that.
The other thing that I noticed, Dr. Nioff said this, he said that from day one, he knew that Dr. Hanna lived and breathed and slept Michigan State University.
Yeah, he did.
And, you know, I understand that partly myself because I feel the same way about the university, but how did he, I mean, did he ever say anything to you about how that came to be in him?
No, he never did to me. I don't know. He just felt that way. And he got all sorts of job offers.
Yeah,
and,
so.
I always felt he won't take that because he loves the university too much. He'll stay right here. Mm. And he didn't until 1969 when he finally left. But I think that, you know, times were changing. And he'd always had a board that worked with him real well. And we used to have marvelous board members. Some of the members of the board were people who wanted to get into the administration of the university, and that made it impossible for a president to operate.
Tell me about it. Mm-hmm. I've got the same problem right now. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that had anything to do with his leaving, but I think probably he thought it was time.
Did you stay on past that time?
No, not very long. I had seen too many people in the office, in offices, be shoved off into a corner, kept on the payroll. I couldn't quite see that for me. And I was almost 62, not quite, and I just couldn't see anybody really wanting me to work for them. They think, well, you work for the president, you're somebody special, when you really aren't. And
we sort of identify you with the president.
Mm-hmm. And so I thought that if I could afford it, it would be time for me to get out too. So mm-hmm. I gave Mr. Hanna a letter and asked him to give it to the board, and he said, no, you better not do that, you better stay around. And then when they sort of had it all set up, you know, with the board members, everything, that ready to transfer Mr. Hanna's position to Howard Neville. And the morning of the board meeting, we discovered that a rumor that was true, that the board was going to approve Dr. Walter Adams, who's a fine man, instead of Dr. Neville. So I told Mr. Hanna, I said, well, you better take care of me before you go. So he did.
I worked for
3 months or so. Mm-hmm.
What was that all about? Because that surprised me. I didn't realize that Neville was considered.
Oh, you didn't?
No. I didn't get that far into my research yet.
Oh. Well, I don't know how much of that might be on record, but I know that was so because Dr. Neville had already talked to me and asked me to stay.
Was he approached by the board? Is that what happened?
Well, yes, he'd been approached by the board, Mr. Hanna, and other administrators, and he had been provost, and doing a marvelous job.
Yeah, I saw some good things about it. I understand that he passed away because I was trying to look him up to interview him.
His wife died, and then he died.
Oh,
and he left here for the University of Maine, and they liked him very much there.
And then, now, with Dr. Adams, did they from the beginning think of him as an intern, or were they?
I think they appointed him president. I don't know whether it was interim or not. I really don't know. You'd have to look back in the board records to see what his title was.
Well, I'll be talking
and
with him this
afternoon.
And I didn't
have any objection to Dr. Adams, but it was just the way things were going. And Walter Adams is one of the best teachers on the campus. I think he is, always has been.
You know, that was interesting that in the 60s they would go back to an academician when it seemed like everybody was going to administrative types for presidents.
Really, it went back to Don Stevens, who's a member of the board, and I don't know whether he had a union connection. Mm-hmm. And, what was his title? There's my other cat. Decided to come out and see who's here.
She probably figures that it was locked up so she can come out.
And he was the one, he, in his work with the union, said, admired Dr. Adams very much.
Mm.
Certainly nothing against Dr. Adams.
I think for sure. No, I understand.
I wouldn't have you print anything against him at all.
I'm not going to be, my number one concern, the best way I can describe it is this. in reading Dr. Dressel's book, mm-hmm. he makes a statement in there that I quite frankly take issue with. He says, Dr. Hanna was the right man in the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. And I now this is my prejudice, and I shouldn't be dropping it on you in an interview because you might turn around and give me what I want to hear rather than your opinion. But I want you to tell me, I want you to be just like you were with Dr. Hanna, because I function the same way. I want you to tell me what you feel. I always felt there was more to it than that. That it was more than just the right person.
Oh, well, I think so, too. I think this vision that he had,
that isn't just a right man. This is a man with vision.
Well, I always think that President Hanna was really one of the greatest men living. And, well, he still is, of course, but...
I understand.
During his years of operating as president of Michigan State, and before, too, he earned being president of Michigan State. He had shown he hadn't been striving to be president. At least I never saw that in him. And when Mr. Shaw announced his retirement by the board, in those days they didn't have these search and selection committees.
Yeah.
And they had a night meeting of the board, and Marie Mercer and I were there. And the board unanimously appointed John Hanna, president of Michigan State, to succeed his father-in-law. And it had nothing to do with Mr. Shaw, and I don't publish it, but I don't think Mr. Shaw approved of it at all, but the board did it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But Marie Mercer and I, who were the only women president, except there was a woman member of the board at the time, we were so thrilled. Because Marie worked for him directly, and I had seen him working for 3 years, and what a wonderful job he was doing as secretary. And we just thought there couldn't have been a better appointment as president.
You know, there's two programs in particular that I'm thinking of. I haven't focused in yet on how I'm going to demonstrate my belief about him.
Mm-hmm.
But I was thinking about using two programs because of the unique nature of the two, and also being a little biased in my personal mm-hmm. philosophy about the two. One is the basic college, university
mm-hmm.
college, and the other is the honors program,
mm-hmm.
or the honors college.
Yeah.
When I first came up here, I was talking with a few professors about, and asking a little bit about the university college, I was quite stunned that here 25 years after it was, in essence, the process of closing it out had begun, there was such animosity. I mean, there was just tremendous, and they didn't even want to discuss it. And it didn't make sense to me, because I'm a product of it and very proud of that.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I felt it was one of the best things that ever happened to me.
Well, I always felt that way too. And I know when Mr. Hanna presented the program to the board, they discussed it for a long time, and their final question to him, one of the members of the board said, well, do you approve, you personally approve of this program? And Mr. Hanna said, yes, he certainly did. And he said, I would be willing to risk my entire career on its success.
Oh, and felt that strong. Mm-hmm. How did it come about?
Well, I think it really was his idea to begin with,
mm-hmm.
and then he got these people working on it. It was a committee of the faculty. Howard Rather was chairman,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know whether you ever met him or not.
No, not yet.
But he, well, he died.
I was afraid of that.
But he was a man, he came from the College of Agriculture, and he was a real, real smart man,
mm-hmm.
and he worked hard. And I certainly wasn't in on any of the planning of it,
mm-hmm.
but yeah. They had frequent meetings.
Dr. Hanna mentioned that Dr. Floyd Reeves also came
Oh
in.
Yes, he was, and a lot of advice from Floyd Reeves.
Mm-hmm. You know, in reading some of the material that I've read so far, I got the feeling that on the surface the faculty supported it 100%, but almost from the beginning, under the surface, they didn't.
Oh. Well, I don't know. There were certain people in the faculty who didn't. But they got a faculty together, and I think the faculty of the University College Even today, they have been just devastated that it was that it's being broken up and discontinued.
I know.
And so am I.
Welcome to the club.
And I think I felt like I did. I just thought it was a marvelous program because I went to a small college, and they always say, well, there's so many things you get at a small college that you don't get at a big university. And I tell them it worked just the opposite for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that one of the things I had always missed in my education was any opportunity to take any of the biological courses.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to, but never could because of conflicts in my schedule. Same kind of a thing you ran into, that in a small college they'd have one section of mathematics, for instance, that I had to take to get my degree. And so I wasn't free to take anything that in the other fields that I really wanted to take.
The irony is a lot of, at least in Ohio, a lot of universities are looking at the concept of that broad-based cultural experience at the undergraduate mm-hmm. level.
And
this is why, this is one of the reasons that I am interested in making it part of my dissertation, because I wanted to see what was good and what was bad about it, so that in essence, someone in another university who does not have this built-in prejudice that seems to be prevalent right now
mm-hmm.
can go in, look at it objectively and say, no, here's what they did right, here's what they did wrong, here's how we can avoid making the same mistakes, because maybe this is what we want to do.
Mm-hmm. I know that when they discontinued it here, that Harvard University was beginning it, almost an exact copy of what we had here. And yet, I don't know why.
Yeah, that's what I've got to figure out. I want to find out why, what happened, because it just doesn't make sense.
Certainly, I've always wished I could talk to Mr. Hamm about it, see what he felt about it.
Oh, believe me, I will be doing that.
Uh-huh.
The other was the Honors College. I guess that was started, what, around 1957 or something?
Goodness, I don't know.
I know
it was started,
they probably started
know.
Thinking
mm-hmm.
about it sooner mm-hmm. than that, but it was started.
But that's been very successful and still is, isn't
well,
it?
Yeah. How come one and not the other, you know?
I don't know. But that was a marvelous program. And it seems to me that Paul Miller was here at the time that was started.
Yeah.
And it may have been one of his ideas that they worked mm-hmm. on and instituted.
I spent the whole day yesterday in the archives with Dr. Honor, and for the first time really focused in on some of the actual correspondence, and one of the people that has come across to me is really supportive, and you can see how he's really fighting near the end of Dr. Hanna's tenure. He's really fighting to get the message across to the importance of the basic college. Is it Dr. Carlin?
Yes, Ed Carlin.
Please mm-hmm. tell me he's still alive.
No, he's not, but his widow is.
I wanted to meet him as soon as I saw that, because I could see
mm-hmm.
the passionate commitment that this man had to the University College and the others.
I think that you could find others. Are you having trouble finding others?
I haven't at this point, but
because
I need to find more people who can tell me what happened.
His secretary is a good friend of mine. She's retired now, but she could give you quite a lot of information.
Oh, I'd love it. Do you know what her name is?
Well, her name now is Barbara Van Balen.
Van Balen, okay.
Mm-hmm. And her telephone number is 332-8174.
Okay, well, I don't know how soon I'll be getting to her, but if you could talk to her in advance and let her know.
I talk to her frequently, and she would be glad to talk to you, and I think she could give you a lot of information, and she could give you names of people to whom you could talk, who were great boosters of the University College.
See, that's what I'd like to do, is get as much information that shows me the importance of it, but also shows me what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want to do that in both programs so that I can compare them, run them side by side and compare them. I think I know what happened, but I'm not for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to find out what happened, what really happened, because I think it's something very important. Quite frankly, I'll give you an example. When I first came down there, I found that one of my physical education instructors in my building, in one of my high school buildings, I was going through his transcripts, I sat there and I looked at it. I said, do I see what I think I see? And I went all the way through. He went through 4 years of undergraduate college, got his bachelor's degree in physical education. Mrs. Jameson, there is no English, there is no math, there is no social studies. It is straight physical education.
No foreign language.
No foreign language. Nothing
just
academic.
Physical education.
Yeah. Now, how can I?
How can he get a bachelor's degree?
Tell me about it. It's a small private university.
Mm-hmm.
And I sit here and say, how can I turn this man loose on my children?
Yeah, how can you?
He can cause more damage innocently
mm-hmm.
by saying, that's not important. I got my degree. I didn't need it. Here I am in a little town and out here in Appalachia, you know, Ohio, and I'll never change and I'll never go anywhere, and this is fine for me. It should be fine for you.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is, those kids aren't going to stay there. They can't. There's no economy that's going to keep them. They're going to have to go out into the world. And if this guy has ingrained in them that they don't need all this,
mm-hmm.
they're going to get eaten alive out there.
I don't see how he could get a degree.
He did.
With just courses in phys ed.
I know. He got the degree, he got the certification, and he's been there several years. And
you,
it just
you read a lot these
and
days.
And he's a young man.
Yeah.
It scares the
well,
daylight
out of him. Well, it's a great disservice to him.
And to every kid that he can affect.
Mm-hmm.
And that's see, that's the kind of thing that's got me scared. In fact, I made it quite clear to my administrators that from now on, unless that transcript is broadly based, I don't even want to see it in my presence. I took selection of staff away from my building principals, which upset the daylights out of them, and I got all kinds of nasty rumors
mm-hmm.
circulating. Of course, you know how it works. If they disagree with you on this point and you've got the right on your side, they're not going to fight you there. They're going to talk about your integrity over here. They're going to gossip about
mm-hmm.
you over there, trying to weaken your home base so that they can then get you there. And that's basically what's happened, because I simply said, I can't allow this anymore, folks. You're hurting the children. One has swung over. He's now seeing the sense of, he's now looking at the argument and saying, you know, putting my ego aside, your argument has merit. And you're right.
Mm-hmm.
The other one isn't quite there yet. It takes it too much as a taking away of his power. And I said, I'm not here to play power games. I'm here to serve the children. And you're not serving the children when you give them a loaded gun like that.
Mm-hmm.
But,
well, with the country, the whole United States recognizing that the high schools and grade schools aren't doing what they should do, it certainly isn't time for the colleges to let people graduate without English and
well, see, I think that's the next move, to be honest with you. Once they have done all their bloodletting at the secondary level, in the public schools,
mm-hmm.
I think they're going to turn to the colleges.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, it's just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, though, some schools are being smart and they're looking at it. I know that Kent State is looking at developing something like the University College. Now, I don't know if they necessarily want to go that way. If I remember correctly from my readings, when a freshman came in at Michigan State, they went right into the University College, and it's like and it's a separate entity from the
mm-hmm.
other departments. So
I think a lot of trouble started, didn't it, because of some of the schools like engineering and veterinary medicine, and some of those who thought that they wanted their students to get them started in their engineering programs. And
I noticed that in something I didn't realize at the time, because interestingly enough, I was in engineering and also and eventually took my degree in math. I didn't take it in education.
Oh.
And as I was reading the materials, I noticed that the one of the departments that was really out front on the attacking of the University College was the engineering school,
mm-hmm.
to the point that they were being very vicious.
Mm-hmm. They just, and there were so many advantages in coming into the University College, because you know how many freshmen come into school and they're gonna be a doctor. Well, they have no idea what courses are required for the doctor when they start, or a veterinarian, or an engineer.
It's just as true today as it was then.
You get into a math class and you flunk out, and you can't do engineering, and so then they have to change. Well, it's so much better to go into University College, and at least I thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to make all those changes. You don't waste all that time. You're learning things that you need to know.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because I came in to be an engineer, as a transfer student. So part of the, I missed part of the university college because I had courses comparable to offset it. But I spent 1 year in it, and then I went into the university college, into engineering. And I left the engineering department strictly on the basis of I didn't like the type of personalities I was seeing there.
Oh.
I saw dog eat dog, nobody worked with nobody. And there was a very negative attitude. Now, I took it at the time, being very naive out of the hills of Wyoming, that this is how all engineers acted.
Oh.
And therefore, I didn't want to have anything to do with it. Now I'm starting to.
The male woman.
I'm starting to realize now that maybe what had turned off was not an attitude in engineering, but an attitude in that particular department at the time because they were so upset about these other things.
Oh, maybe it was. Of course,
it's fascinating. What I'm learning more about as I get into things.
Well, they had their core courses. It just seemed to me that they were wonderful. And I suppose partly because I felt the lack of them in my education. I never liked history, for instance. And I just thought that I was the luckiest person in the world because at Cole I didn't have to take history. I should have had to take history.
You know, how many times you hear that from people and then others will come back and say, well, that isn't scientific. You didn't figure that out scientifically. But I think a lot of what we learned in life was through personal experience. There is nothing scientific about being eaten by a tiger. If you've learned through observation that tigers eat people, I mean, you've learned your lesson. You don't have to scientifically prove it.
You don't have to be eaten by a tiger to know it.
At a 98% level of significance, you know. Once one arm is gone, it is gone. I mean, there comes a, and it's ironic because I think in our striving to be objective, sometimes we forget the human element of observation of the years of experience. And it just saddens me because I think as I'm looking at this now, and I might be wrong, I think one of the biggest problems is that the greatest strength of the university college was in preparing people more, by making them more well-rounded and able to deal in the world more effectively. But how do you test that?
I don't know.
How do you defend that analytically?
Of course, they say now that they are keeping the courses, the university college courses, but I have a great nephew out here, a sophomore, and he is having some, I think, some really good courses. He plans now to major in accounting, but he's taking social sciences and humanities and courses, which I think are real good.
Dr. Neoff mentioned to me that he had been approached, along with some others, about giving their opinions on whether or not to reinstitute the university college. And I called the provost's office, and the secretary was very emphatic that no, that can't be. And I asked her if she would have the provost call me, and I never got a call back from them.
Yeah. Now that's one thing that never happened when I was.
I know, and I'm not used to that, and I'm tempted to call back and do a little harassing myself and say, hey, wait a minute, this isn't how I was treated when I was there, and I don't expect it to change.
Well, this David Scott, who was provost, everybody seems to like him very much, but...
how long has he been here?
He came originally as a John A. Hanna professor, and I don't know how long he's been here, seven, 8 years probably, I don't know.
One of the other things that Dr. Wallenfeld mentioned that he seems to be seeing disappear is the commitment to the land-grant philosophy of public service.
Well, I don't know whether it is. Dr. DiBiagio stresses it all the time himself, that it is a land-grant university. And I have really liked Dr. DiBiase.
I haven't met him yet. Because I've been working through the power in his office. That's the secretary. We know you secretaries run everything anyway.
His secretary, Sharon Knoll.
I know you secretaries run every office, so I learned a long time ago, get to know the secretary first.
Well, you can gain a lot by knowing the secretaries, and they open a lot of doors.
But she's also, by pure coincidence, a University of Akron graduate, which helped me. I think that helped me a little bit with her, but she's been very, very supportive and helping.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Hanna's oldest son has been very...
Oh, Bob?
Yeah, he's been very good. I've spoken with him several times over the phone.
Yeah.
And he's helping you with some addresses and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I want to get into is Dr. Hanna's personal side, because I want to grasp, if I can, or somehow reach this visionary side of him, because see, that's what I sensed. In fact, the title of my dissertation is John A. Hanna - Visionary. Because
mm-hmm.
I sensed that a long time ago, when I was at school here. That's why when I saw that comment in Dr. Dressel's book, I went, you've missed the mark. I know your folk. One of my professors, in fact, he's a dean at the University of Akron, asked me, he says, what are you going to do that's so different from what Dr. Dressel did? Because Dr. Dressel focused on the organizational setup of the university. I want to focus on the man, because no matter how much he focused on the university and the development of each department, I kept seeing a thumbprint. And that mm-hmm. thumbprint was the same one every single time.
Mm-hmm.
What I've got to do is now define that thumbprint, but I'm quite convinced that that thumbprint has JAH on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I'm trying to reach into, is come to understand what makes Dr. Hanna tick, because I think we need more like him. We need more visionaries.
Oh, certainly.
Now, how do we find them and identify them?
I don't know.
I think that's the next paper for somebody.
But he was a visionary. That's true. But he always seemed to know how to go about to attain his goals. And they weren't goals for himself personally. They were goals for the university. And he had a great knack for selecting people to work on them and giving them guidance and support, but giving them full rein to make their studies, and make their decisions, make their recommendations.
Mm-hmm. But he basically kind of kept them focused on
mm-hmm.
what their goal was.
Yes.
And then just kind of sat back
mm-hmm.
and they just kind of watched them to make sure they stayed focused.
Yeah, he kept in touch, and they kept in touch.
I saw in
but he was never stopped. If he had a goal, if he didn't attain it one way, he'd try another way. And finally, things worked out. And I just never saw anybody like him.
Do you think that knowing how to approach things was something he kind of learned as he went through, as he grew up, or was it something that just came natural to him?
I think probably came natural to him. Of course, he was raised in a fine family.
Oh, yeah.
Had good schooling, good support all the time.
I was very impressed with the background of his family and how,
mm-hmm.
At the time that he was a young man, if you look at the percentage of people that were, quote, educated in our country, he had a tremendous level of educated people within his family,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, my particular group believes very strongly in. And he's a case in point for everything that we've always said, that you've got to have your education. That is the most important thing in life. It's the one thing that no one can take away from you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that skill, once you have it, is there.
Mm-hmm. He had a great ability to pick up something and read it very quickly. And he always had an eagle eye to pick out the flaws, the good things.
Bob said he says, even though he's, you know, up in age right now and is having some medical problems, he says, when you catch him on a good day, that steel trap mind, is how he put
mm-hmm.
it, that steel trap mind is still there.
And I saw him working for so many years with a big university, and chairman of the Civil Rights Commission, and all of his other state and national mm-hmm. jobs. And he could keep them all separate. He could go from one big thing to another big thing, and mm-hmm. and comprehend and advise and work on each one of them.
I was, you know, I'll be honest with you, I really didn't know about his involvement in civil rights until I started studying him.
Well, he was the original chairman of the Civil Rights Commission.
Yeah.
And was chairman of it until he left Michigan State. I think he was chairman for 13 years.
Yeah, that really surprised me,
and
because I just
never
knew.
Oh my, the work that he did on that was really marvelous, I thought. I tell people that he did more than anybody else in the world to further the interests of the black people in the country, because he was the one, he worked hard on and went down all sorts of avenues to get that voting rights bill passed.
Mm. Did you realize that?
And if it hadn't been for him, I don't think they ever would have passed it.
Why was he that committed? I'm not surprised. I won't put him down because I don't mean it that way.
No, I know. I don't.
It's just like it's a change in tracks. Mm-hmm. Going back to what you said about being able to keep all these things going.
I don't know, except he had a great feeling of fairness and equality for all people. And
he seems to share that with Chief Justice Earl Warren. I've read and seen some things recently on PBS. There was a documentary on Chief Justice Earl Warren, and that was one of the things I kept coming back to,
mm-hmm.
the sense of fair play, that was very important.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting the feeling that that's also part of what made Dr. Hanna who he was.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious as to where did that come from, you know, because...
Well, I remember the first summer he came up to the office in first July, and I don't know. They just wouldn't be happy there with all the white girls, so they were advised to the university to try to help them find a nice black family to live with. Well, you live with a nice black family in Lansing. In those days, you lived down on South Logan Street or in the west part of town. So these girls, there weren't very many of them in those days, would live way over on the west side of town and have to come on bus to campus. And I didn't realize there was any problem, really, until the dean of women called one day and wanted me to ask Mr. Hanna what she should tell black girls when they applied for admission at Michigan State wanted to live in the dormitory. I remember I went to the door and I said, Miss Conrad wants to know, repeatedly. And he looked at me as though it was my idea that they should live on the west side of town. He said, well, tell her to tell that if they're residents of Michigan, to treat them like any other student. Any student who applies, if they want to live in the dormitory, that's their privilege. So
he was quite shocked by that, I guess.
That was the first year he was president, so you see, he really had an interest in that before he became chairman of the Civil Rights Commission.
It's very heartwarming, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'm always fascinated by how people get to that point of view, because just personal thing for a second, I have two brothers who are very, the best term I can use for it is amoral, you know, whatever gets in my head at this point. Whereas if it's not right, I can't do it.
Yeah.
And if it means my job, so be it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can never understand why I'm the way I am, and they're not.
They're not.
Yeah, and I think in a way, because there are so many things about Dr. Hanna that I see in myself, except for that unique ability to get projects going. I wish I had his smoothness.
Mm-hmm.
That I feel like in finding him, I'm going to know more about myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I, you know, if he, with his his ability to perceive things can articulate back to me why he was the way he was, it'll help me see why I'm the way I am. Because I drive my wife nuts. She says, you know, you're the only one I know that push comes to shove. If it's your job or your integrity, there's no question. Yeah. There's no discussion.
Yeah.
There's no need to even think about it. You know, it's a knee-jerk reaction. Mm-hmm. The job goes.
Yeah.
The integrity is what's got to count. And she says, I don't understand. I've never seen anyone like you before. And I cannot explain that to her.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know why I'm that way.
Maybe
in getting to know him, I'll get to know why I'm the way I am.
It's a good thing we have a few people who feel that way.
I don't know, sometimes it scares me.
Well, he had a great sense of fairness, and he was he was terribly interested in providing an education for every student in Michigan who wanted an education,
mm-hmm.
no matter what their lot was in life, what their where their background was. And I know he strived to get the people from poor homes, give them a chance for college education if they had the brains.
Mm-hmm. In other words, he wouldn't lower the standards, but if they could meet the standards,
yeah.
then
mm-hmm.
he wanted them there. Was there ever a situation that you saw him in where it might have been, you know, like he mentioned when he talked about the University College, but he put his job on the line for it, where he really was put on a spot like that? You know, did you ever see a situation occur where he was in a position where he had to literally say, you know, that's it, this is the way I feel, this is the way I'm going to be, and if you can't support me, here's my resignation?
Oh, well, I never saw that, because the board was his employers, and they,
mm-hmm.
the boards he had were always 100% behind him. I had a lot of confidence in him. But it wasn't
that
he didn't, he was very good at listening to other people and taking their advice,
mm-hmm.
and discussing things with them. He didn't.
You mentioned how in the beginning the boards were, you know, so easy to work with, and how they cut down a little.
Well, they were selfless. I think that
mm-hmm.
they weren't out to make a name for themselves or to get any perks or
mm-hmm.
anything. They were dedicated for the good of the university, the good of the state.
How did they get their offices back in the
same way? They were elected.
Really? Back
mm-hmm.
then they were elected just as they elected now? When did the change start to occur then?
I don't know. It's we had one or two that had ideas when they became board members that they had a little power to run their university. And of course they do, but not directly.
Yeah.
They hire administrators to do that. And I think an example of this is this latest business on George Perlis, where the board appointed George Perlis as athletic director in spite of the recommendation of the president.
Oh, that has happened. I knew they were talking about it, but I hadn't seen it yet.
Oh, and I thought probably you'd read about that.
No, I hadn't seen it yet.
No.
I knew that he was holding out in the hopes that he would get it, but I didn't realize that there was that kind of controversy, you know, when you're as far removed as we are, you get just bits and pieces of information, especially when you're in the shadow of Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, it's hard to even get information about how Michigan State's doing half the time, because Ohio State only talks about there being one other university in Michigan,
mm-hmm.
and I don't even discuss the name of that place, but which a lot of people get the biggest tickle
mm-hmm.
out. Where I'm at, the school I'm at, their fight song is Hail to the Victors.
Oh, I know.
And they're all Ohio State fans, and I asked them one day, I said, do you realize what that fight song is that you have? And they said, no. What do you mean? It's a nice song. I said, where did you get it? Oh, we've always had it. I said, but do you know what the name of it is? And they said, no. And I said, it's called Hail to the Victors.
Oh, and they said, well, that's pretty nice. I said, no, you don't understand. You said you are avid Ohio State fans, right? And they said, yeah. I said, that's the fight song for you.
For the
University of Michigan. And they went, it is? I said, yeah, how can you do that?
I didn't realize they had the same.
No, the high school I'm at.
Oh, the high school?
The school, in my school system.
Don't you
realize that? I said, here you are. You've got green and white, which is Michigan State colors.
Yeah.
And you got these other places.
You got the
other
University of Michigan
fight song. And they went, I never knew that. And so now they tease me about it all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll get some staff members will, anytime Michigan does something, I'll get a little copy out of the paper about it. Or if Ohio State does something, I'll get a copy. So I have sitting in my briefcase at home 5 state newspapers. Michigan State beat U of M in basketball game. You know, yeah, that's going into the school mail on Monday to certain people. The whole paper. But
you didn't get to go to the game, did you?
I caught the last half of it.
Did you?
I was trying to get up here for it, but the plane that I thought was a direct flight from Columbus wasn't. They had a stopover in Detroit. And they said, well, your plane's just going to land and pick up some people and leave. So I thought, well, maybe I'll still make it. I get there and I'm sitting in the plane. I look up and everybody's gone. And the steward says, what are you doing here? I says, oh, I'm waiting for go to Lansing. Oh, you have to go over the hall to another plane. And I thought this was just one stopover. Well, the number moves, but the planes change.
Oh.
So I go over there and then they sat out there on the runway for a half hour.
Drive you crazy?
Oh, it drove me nuts because I knew what I was missing.
Oh.
And then I got into the airport and I always got National at Rent-A-Car because it was always the counter that was empty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everybody else figured that out. So here we are on one big line behind National and Hertz and Avis is empty. And we're listening to the game and everyone's saying, boy, they're really doing great. And I said, will you please hurry? And they look at me like, what? And I went, pulled my ticket out and they went, oh, no wonder. And then they would speed up. I didn't make it.
You didn't make it. No. Did you get there for part of it?
On the second half.
Yeah.
It was good because it was the important half.
Yeah, it really was.
And that Bridgeland Center is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It's nice. See, I got involved with everything out there, I guess, and I've gone to, I tell everybody, I've gone to football, basketball games for over 50 years now, and I've gone to the hockey games since Munn Arena was
mm-hmm.
built. And I tell them I never had a free ticket. All these people, they're so anxious to go around and get free tickets to everything.
Oh, we're all like that.
And,
you know, everybody's looking for an angle to save a little money.
And it's easy enough to be a fan if you get a free ticket all your life.
In the early 60s when I was going to school here, you know, we used to get two tickets each
mm-hmm.
student got to. What I used to do is I'd work for the police force on that day in direct traffic
mm-hmm.
and then use my badge to get in. I'd sell my two tickets to make some money
uh-huh.
because my father was not financially well off.
Mm-hmm.
We had sold our ranch at a loss in Wyoming and moved east, and he was reestablishing himself, so things were very tight for us, and I used to do that. So when, you know, you hear about these people always pulling these angles, it kind of bothers you.
Yeah.
But
well, it bothers me terribly to see these.
I'll tell you what, it really bothers me when I see someone who's
so darn hard and
yeah.
never got anything free.
When you see someone who has a lot of money doing that, then that really bothers
uh-huh.
me. But when you see someone who doesn't have money and is just trying to find a way to get by, I can understand it.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, invariably though, it's always that guy who's got the extra bucks that wants the free ride. And that, I agree with you. It just, you know, come on, I earned it, you earned it. I worked hard for my walk into that
mm-hmm.
stadium. I was there early in the morning at 8 o'clock directing traffic
mm-hmm.
all the way up to 1:30 of the game.
Yeah.
At the great pay scale of $1 an hour, which
oh
was
my.
Minimum wage then.
Oh, that's right.
Well, let's maybe take a look at some of this stuff if you don't mind. And
I really have forgotten what's there.
Get some really nice pictures of Dr. Hannah. Oh, this is the gang, huh?
The Hannah family?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brian must have been something when he started dating Dr. Shaw's daughter. It was funny because I never realized that in reading his memoirs until Dr. Nioff mentioned it. That you know, who the relationship. I thought that was rather sweet, personally.
Well, she was a graduate of Michigan State. I think she has her master's degree. And a very good student. And I think her major was chemistry.
Oh, really?
I believe so.
Wow.
I was at the... Oh, that's his 25th anniversary recognition, I believe. Mm-hmm. I haven't looked at this in so long, but... Commencement address by David Lilienthal, 1949.
Oh boy.
I think he's been recognized in other areas much more than he has locally.
That tends to be the way it is, mm-hmm. if you really stop and think about it. Wasn't it? Didn't Jesus say something about that in the Bible, about how you have to go away to become?
Some of these are fairly recent. Here's a picture of David Scott, 1982. Oh, these are John A. Hanna Distinguished Professor titles with Mr. Hanna, and David Scott is one of them.
You wouldn't know what year or the date on this.
It's really written it down, wasn't it? Well, at age 83, that was 4 years ago.
Here we go.
Oh.
May 86. Oh boy. Now this, let me write that down because I'm going to call them and see if they can give me a copy of that. That would be good to have.
I don't know who sent me this, but this is from the Washington Post. Probably. Might have been a cousin of mine who lives in Washington, but there's an article about Michigan State here.
Oh, okay. Let me get this down here. Let's see.
This wasn't long ago. Well, we worked long and hard for lots of things. And he never gave up. And I remember one of the things he started to work on right away was a home and home football schedule with the University of Michigan. Michigan State had always been first on their fall football games mm-hmm. series because we'd go down there and we could fill their stadium for them. And we were the first game on their schedule, and it was always in Ann Arbor. And he worked a long, long time to get a home-and-home basis on that. And I tell you, he just kept at it till he got
They didn't want to give it up because it started people coming there, huh?
Asking their football coach for it, the answer was no. You ask their athletic director for it, the answer was no. You go higher up, and you go to other people, and finally you got it. I don't remember all the sources he used, but he won.
Good for him. This is the Washington Post one?
That's the Washington Post one. That's 89, but it's kind of an interesting article.
I see March and April mixed up on my numbers when you converted it to numbers. See why I like to use tape recorder. I'm always afraid that if I copy it, if I don't copy it right, I won't get it all. Let's see.
Isn't that funny? I can't remember who sent that to me.
I'd say it's because you're getting old, but I've already got it, and I've had it for years, so I know it has nothing to do with age. This is good. I really appreciate this because this is going to save me some time. I spent all day yesterday just like this in the archives.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that surprised me is I saw a lot of things where people had written to Dr. Hanna, but not a lot of things where he had written back, you know, little memos.
Mm-hmm.
Did he do a lot of personal verbal communication, like pick up the phone and talk to him or things
like
that?
Oh, yes. Yes, a lot. Mm-hmm.
So he kind of preferred the personal touch rather than writing back an answer.
Yes, or he might write a note on something. But he was very quick making decisions. And once he made the decision, people knew that they could count on him. They'd go ahead. And
oh, this is nice. I'd like to get into this if you don't mind. See what.
It's kind of yellowed with age, isn't it?
Just one.
Is there a date on there?
That's what I'm looking for, because if I can get the date, then I can get a copy of it. No, it doesn't have it.
Somebody probably sent it to me.
Yeah, I'd like to get it. Could I ask a favor? Next time you're somewhere where you can get a copy of this made, you could run a copy for me?
Oh, sure.
I'd really appreciate it.
Oh, you can take any of it with you if you want to.
I don't. That makes me very nervous when I'm holding on to someone else's stuff.
Oh, well, I've been thinking I should get rid of it. Because I'm not going to live forever, you know.
So, still keep it. let someone else worry about getting rid of it. I have a ton of my stuff, and I sat there and looked at it and said the same thing, and then I said, well, you know, sometimes you kind of start thinking about things back then, and you pick these out, and you look at them, and it jogs your memory back to what it's all about. I'm going to keep them until the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
And then my son can look at it and say, I don't know what this is, and throw it in the garbage can. Or he might just sit there and look at something and remember me talking about it. Mm-hmm. And the memory, it serves as a memory key for him, and he keeps it. So
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to worry about it. I'm going to just enjoy it.
Well, that's a good way to be.
Well, I guess it's the fatalism of my background, but I look at it this way. I got my job is to do the best I can while I'm here and enjoy myself.
Yeah,
and not worry about it.
Well, I don't think that's just something I kept because David Lilienthal was kind of a great man at one time, and I've forgotten. I certainly wouldn't be able to repeat a word of what he said in his commencement talk.
I've read about of him.
Mm-hmm.
Don't bet on it. Kittens are kittens. I was really surprised at how much of a kitten she is, as big as she is.
I've thrown away a lot of things, but
oh yeah, I have this.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've got two real good articles here that will help. We appreciate it. Plus what you've given me thus far.
Here's Mr. Hammond's. These are people mostly on our lecture concert series.
I'm a
old Biggie Munn.
Yeah. Well, he was all excited at that picture.
Yeah.
I remember seeing her in a lot of movies. I love the movies of the 30s and 40s. I wish we could get a little bit more like him. Well, hello.
Well, who is she?
I can't remember her name, but she's an actress that was
played
minor roles back in those days.
I think it was Rose Bowl time when. You want to go back in the bedroom? I thought maybe she needed to use her litter box, but. Dorothy Miller was Secretary Biggie Munn, and here's the Michigan State College 1952 varsity football team. Oh. National collegiate champions.
I remember that. My wife, if she heard this tape, would start laughing because that's the year she was born.
Now, why don't I identify people? Oh, I ought to do that right now, hadn't I? Mr. Hanna, Nelson Rockefeller,
yeah,
and
Ruthven. What's his name? Dr. Dressel has this picture in his book.
Oh, he has?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
and then here is President Hanna and President Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
I have these as autographed photos of famous people.
Well, I think that's great. I really enjoyed your helping me. I really felt that you gave me some good insights and some leads to look into. And I want to thank you.